May it please the Court. Mr. Reinert will be addressing the relationship between the statute at issue and health insurance. I'll be focusing on the standard and scope of review and standing. This Court has played a limited role in reviewing the legislative process, examining the various versions of the bill, and overturning legislation only if passed which clearly and undoubtedly violated the Constitution. The medical associations have asked this Court to expand its role, playing referee to the maneuverings of the legislature, to base its decision on the merits of the legislation instead of the Constitution, and to find standing where there is no threat of harm. Here, the medical associations include allegations about the manner of passage, about actions and statements occurring after the passage, and even in the next legislative session.
What do the medical association plaintiffs assert as their standing interests?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What is their standing? What are their interests? What interests do they assert?
They claimed?
Yes.
They have claimed that they represent the public interest. They claim that they represent their patients. And they say that there is a threat of discipline, that they are facing a threat of discipline if they coordinate.
Now, the last one's their own interest. And do they assert an economic interest as competitors?
They have not made any statements regarding an economic interest. If the information that the medical association...
Now, this area is very interesting about the title and all this, and that it's almost like Potter Stewart said of pornography, I know it when I see it. And after before Hammerschmidt, there were very few cases on these issues, and afterward, there were some others. How would you distinguish this case from the billboard case, the one about, we start off with a criminal act, and the committee changed the title, and we found that it was a billboard regarding sex shops or something.
As I recall, the billboard case, the title of the case was transportation, and the regulation of billboards was found as it relates to highways. That was supposed to be enough of a relationship, even though it didn't actually affect what was going on in the actual act of transportation. The mere advertising to people who were in transport seemed to be enough. I would say that this is similar to that.
If anything, the
connection is even stronger than that one. In this situation, what you've got is an action, a legalized...
Well, it has to be stronger because we found against the state in that case. We found that the statute with respect to the billboard was not...
Oh, is that right? Then my memory is not as good as I would hope.
So you're right to say it's stronger. That's a good point to say.
It is a stronger connection in this case because the midwives, the legalization of the midwives will have an actual impact on the insurability of the actions of the midwives. Now that certified midwives have been legalized, insurance companies can provide coverage, can provide reimbursement for the use of those midwives.
But that's not what the bill was about, was to provide coverage for certified midwives, was it?
It allows that coverage. A statute and a piece of legislation can have more than one purpose. And in this case, certainly part of what was going on is to legalize the actions and the practice of the certified midwives. But that's not to say it doesn't have other impacts as well. To rule in the favor of the medical associations, you'll have to conclude that, in fact, it has no other impact, that it has no impact whatsoever on insurance. That's simply not the case. Now,
Is the issue whether it will have a tangential or collateral effect on insurance, or does it need to be more direct? There's some arguments, I think, in the opposing counsel's brief that that's too many steps removed, in effect, from the purpose of the bill, which was health insurance.
The first step in affecting insurance is to legalize the procedure itself. It's up to the legislature to decide.
That's the only connection, though. That's the only way you could say it relates to health insurance.
I believe
that is a consequence of legalizing this practice.
I think that's an area that Mr. Reinert discussed extensively in his briefing as to the extent of the connection. But I would say that's the strongest point in favor of from the state's perspective, that is the strongest point in favor of the connection, is that that is the initial step. There could be no other steps taken until this is done. The legislature can't take any other steps with respect to health insurance and certified midwives unless they take this step initially.
So, of course, we found a connection between emergency medical services and a TIF Act on a piece of property in St. Peter's that was added, it was amended to the emergency medical services, and we said it's okay to say you can't have a TIF because it relates to emerging medical services and that it might reduce the tax base.
As I recall, that was the rationale for that particular case.
And we said that was okay.
I'm remembering it a little better this time. Let me mention also, in terms of the standing issue, at this point, there has been no demonstration in the record that this bill will have any effect on the physicians who are members of these associations. This is authority that has been expressly granted by the legislature to the certified midwives. If anything, 191.228 allows ordination by doctors with certified midwives. That coordination is strictly voluntary, and in fact, there's no allegation that among any of the affidavits in this case that the physician will, in fact, coordinate. This is entirely a speculative basis for standing.
Your co-counsel is going to address the clear title and single subject?
Yes.
Okay. I have a number of questions for him, so...
All right. At this point, if there are no further questions with respect to the standing or the scope of the review, then I will...
Well, I have a question regarding the standing. You say coordinates with a midwife. What if a patient comes into an emergency room who's worked with a midwife and needs emergency treatment from an OBGYN? The doctor treats the patient. Is that coordinating with the midwife, or is that exempt?
I believe that would fall under the requirements of the hospital and the emergency physicians on duty to address the concerns of a patient coming into the emergency room.
But by virtue of the fact that this patient had been previously treated by a midwife.
I don't think that amounts to coordination. That's not an effort by them to plan out a course of treatment. That's responding to a situation that's presented at the emergency room.
So the physician would have to deal directly and communicate with the midwife to be found coordinating with the midwife.
I think that would have to be something that would take place over a period of time. When you have, even if an emergency room doctor is getting information from a midwife who accompanies a pregnant woman into the hospital, that's the type of gathering of information that I think a doctor has a duty to get. That's different than planning out a course of treatment in advance. And I think that's where this hypothetical concern from the physicians has been coming from. But there is no duty to coordinate in advance. Obstetricians can continue to practice in the manner they have in the past. They don't allege that they will continue to coordinate with the physicians, with the midwives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Yeah, please report.
Please.
Let me try to address some of the questions that have been asked. I think one of the things that you have to understand about this provision is that the enactment of the provision which authorizes midwives to practice is the means by which the legislature effectuated the ability of insurance companies and insurers to insure midwife services. You have to distinguish that legislation has an end and it has a means. And what is important for purposes of clear title, for purposes of original purpose, for purposes of multiple topic, is what is the end? And if the end is to provide for health insurance, then...
Well, the immediate end was to legalize the practice.
I disagree, Your Honor. That was the means by which they...
I understand, but that's what the face of the statute says.
That is what the statute does.
Right.
That is what the statute says. But you could not make these services insurable unless and until...
But that's a consequence of the legalization of it.
No.
Well, sure it is.
No, I respectfully disagree. That this was the means, was to authorize midwives to practice.
Some of the certified professional midwives are nurse midwives, and they're already authorized to practice in extended roles by the Nursing Practice Act. So there's another group that are that are in this organization, certified professional midwives that are not nurses.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's correct. And then there are also lay midwives who would not be covered by this provision. But
because they're not recognized by that organization.
Because they're not recognized by NOCA. But to answer your question, Your Honor, here's what I think. Is if you want to assume that the purpose was to authorize midwives to practice, there's no evidence of that. And so what you are doing is you are assuming something that makes the act unconstitutional. And this court has consistently held.
Let me narrow my question. I'm not so much concerned with original purpose and single subject. I am concerned with the clear title provision because it seems that it is under-inclusive because the title relating to health insurance doesn't necessarily cover all health care issues. And had the title been worded an act relating to health care services or health care and health insurance, there's no problem then.
And Your Honor, I think you're referring to the Missouri State Medical Association case. I think there's a big difference there. If you look at the earlier case, the one that we...
National Solid Waste, too.
Edwards versus... Right, it has that same language. First, Businessman's Insurance. What it says is that the title sufficiently indicates the substantial purpose of the law. And the cases have consistently said, we don't descend to the particulars.
The clear title has to have an umbrella that covers all... I wrote the case.
I know you did, Ron. And that's why I think what you have to look at is in that particular case, what you had was you had provisions, medical provisions, that required doctors give informed consent on particular matters, which was totally unrelated to the health insurance provisions in there. So you did have these two separate tracks of provisions in that bill. Here you have a single provision, purpose of which and the effect of which is to effectuate health insurance.
Okay, the title has to have an umbrella sufficient to cover all of the matters that are covered in the bill.
The title has to have a sufficient umbrella to cover the purpose of the bill. In other words, not the particulars by which that purpose is achieved. Here, the purpose is health insurance, and this particular provision effectuates health insurance.
Doesn't it have to be sufficiently clear to give notice to those voting on it as to what's included? It can't be over-inclusive or under-inclusive.
It does. It says we're voting on health insurance, and this particular measure effectuates health insurance. It brings it up.
Wouldn't anything that can be insured then effectuate health insurance under your argument? I mean, anything could be put in there as long as it's something that's insurable?
That may be, Your Honor. You can always come up with extreme examples, but you're right. It could be that there would be something.
I'm asking whether if we set a rule that's what it would permit. I'm not coming up with any kind of extreme examples. I'm trying to find out what the effect of accepting your argument would be, and it seems like it's saying that anything that's insurable can be put in this bill.
Because it's about health insurance. It's not about the regulation of health insurance companies. It's not about particular parts of health insurance. It's about health insurance generally. And if it's an insurable under health insurance, then it's within the title of this. I've exceeded my time. Are there any other questions?
Yes, please. There is one.
Within the language of the bill, insurance, in the language that provides to or relates to midwifery, is there the word insurance?
In the bill, Your Honor?
In the bill.
Or in the particular provision?
In the provisions of your, the parts that relate.
No, it doesn't say insurance, but it doesn't have to.
Never says that. So we have to infer that the purpose is to obtain insurability.
The rule of this court is you look at and you interpret, construct the language in that particular provision, and then you compare what is the relationship of that to the title. It doesn't matter that it doesn't say insurance. I suspect there are other provisions in there that also don't say insurance, but it relates to insurance because it brings about the ability of insurance companies and insurers to cover this particular health care service under the insurance policy. Okay.
We prepared an exhibit for all arguments that we like the text of the session. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not all of us, but.
I know.
It's in the brief. I'm sure I can. I have it. Don't worry.
May it please the Court. The issue in this case is whether a statutory section complies with Missouri Constitution's procedural requirements if it does not relate to the subject expressed in the title of the bill, but instead relates to a different subject that in turn may relate to the subject of the bill based on future actions that may or may not be taken. Under settled precedent from this Court, it does not. This Court has long held that all the provisions of a bill must relate to the subject expressed in the bill's title. The Court has previously rejected the types of indirect...
There is a relation, but it's sort of indirect rather than direct, because I think it is a consequence of the legalization of this practice that it would be insurable. So, we said in our cases that it has to, that the relation has to be direct, or can it merely be indirect to suffice?
This Court's previous cases have clearly prohibited or required a more direct chain of reasoning than being applied in this case. The indirect chain reasoning arguments being made here have been specifically rejected by this Court's precedents.
So that the exclusion of a TIF for large piece of property in St. Peter's would so directly affect the tax base for emergency medical services, that would be connected then in that case?
In the St. Charles County case, the reason that was sufficient was because it was in a floodplain, and it was to avoid emergency services being, the floodplain being developed.
Well, that was pretty indirect.
Which was, yeah, and I think that defines the outer limits that this Court has
outer limits.
Recognized in indirection. The types of arguments being made here to justify the provision are that because the service is now legal, in the future, healthcare consumers and insurance companies may choose to make it the subject of a health insurance contract.
Your adversary says that the title should cover the provision should be related to the purpose, but not the details of how it's accomplished. Do you think that's an accurate statement of the law?
The title must express the single subject of the bill.
But the subject really relates to, well, what is the purpose of the bill, right?
That's right. And
they're almost synonymous.
And the state also argued that a bill can have more than one purpose, and I'm not sure how that's being used, but under the Constitution it's clear that you must have a single subject. Mm-hmm. Purpose is usually referred to in the context of the original purpose provision. The original purpose can't change as it goes through, and single subject is what you look at as pertains to the purpose or the subject of the final bill.
But your opponent says that the purpose of certifying the midwives is to allow them to be covered by health insurance.
Yeah, there's no evidence in the text of the section which links this to insurance. The only link in the bill to insurance is the title, health insurance. They have reduced it to the only argument that they have conceived is that because the services are now legal, they may become insurable.
Should that be obvious to a legislator that by certifying a particular type of medical service, it makes it eligible for insurance? Should that be obvious?
Whether it should be obvious or I don't think that's the test. The test is whether it's related, as defined in this Court's previous precedents, such that it was encompassed within the subject of health insurance.
But if it's illegal or it's not legal, then it wouldn't probably be insured, but they make it legal. There's very little that has to be proved in the legislature to make it, is that some national basis, basically?
Yes. And on this issue of whether this was the means to make the services insurable, this Court in the Aiken case considered an analogous argument. The Aiken case is a post-Hammerschmidt case. There, the purpose of the bill was relating to education. It had provisions relating to education, and it had provisions for a general tax increase. And the argument was a general tax increase and education are separate subjects, and the Court said that may be true, except for the fact that in the Aiken case, it said the tax increase money shall be transferred to support education. And the requirement to transfer the money to support education was the link that linked the tax increase to the education. Here, the link is missing. This provision legalized midwife services, which is a different subject. but it didn't require mandate insurance coverage for them. It didn't prohibit insurance companies from discriminating regarding providers of services. There's no link whatsoever in this provision to health insurance. And that's the fatal reason why it's not the incident means to the incident means arguments fail.
There wasn't much of a link in the TIF case in St. Charles County either.
And I think that's the outer bounds, and I think this is clearly beyond this outer bounds. If you look at this court's single subject and clear title jurisprudence, Hammerschmidt restated and synthesized prior law in this area. Since after Hammerschmidt, there were a number of cases, Missouri Healthcare Association, the Cardinal Glennon Hospital case, National Solid Waste Manufacturer, where this court evaluated how that was going to apply in previous circumstances. This court said an under-inclusive title under the Hammerschmidt rule is fatal to a bill. This court said you can't use indirect chain reasoning arguments to establish the logical connection necessary to satisfy the procedural requirements.
Don't these things come to us with a presumption of being related simply by virtue of the deference we give to the legislature in making these judgments?
There's not a presumption that they're related. What this court says is it looks at the bill, unless it will clearly and undoubtedly violate the Constitution, it will sustain it. So it's got to be clear, and it's got to be undoubted. Here, there just simply is nothing in this bill, this section, that relates to health insurance. It's only based on future actions that may be taken. In the Hammerschmidt case, that bill said it was relating to elections. It included provisions for county governance, which would have to be approved at an election. But the court said that the fact that an election may occur in the future is not a sufficient nexus to make county governance related to elections. The fact that some future action is going to have to be taken doesn't satisfy the logical connection requirement. These kind of arguments, the indirect arguments being made here, the future effect arguments are arguments that would effectively eviscerate the single subject requirement. This court's Hammerschmidt prudence is very well developed, and it's very clear to the legislature what they can and cannot do. You can see that by the progression of cases. The Missouri State Medical Association case, the National Solid Waste Manufacturers, the Cardinal Glennon's case established clear violations. And more recently, this court has been probing, and what this court has said is, if you want to broaden the scope of the bill, the legislature, you're fine to do that, you certainly may do that, you must change the bill's title to notify the public and other legislators that the scope of the bill is being broadened. And when you don't do that, you fail to give notice so that the public and other legislators may have input into the process and debate the effect of the language that's being introduced, which will affect the vital health service in this case. In this court's more recent cases, in the Trout case, Jackson County Sports Complex case, the legislature did just that. It amended its title to make them broad, and those cases posited themselves differently in testing when a title is overbroad. The legislature and this court admitted that the legislature understands what the rules are. Similarly, in the Missouri Association of Club Executives case, this court for the second time found that a bill violated the original purpose test. There, the title had been changed from the original title, and it changed from its original purpose. It was made a very broad title at the very end of the process, the title was broad enough to cover the subject, but the original purpose had changed. So you clearly see that under the established Hammerschmidt jurisprudence, that the legislature understands the rules, and they're following them. This case is not like the most recent cases. This is like the cases that this court has clearly prohibited, where a unrelated provision is tucked into a bill with an under-inclusive title. To rule in favor of the state and the other appellants, this court would effectively have to overrule.
So the legislature did not know what they were voting on?
What's that?
The legislature did not know what they were voting on? They did not. They were on notice they were voting on midwives?
The procedure, when this happened, there was a Senate substitute bill pending on the floor of the Senate. It did not contain this provision. Subsequently, that was withdrawn. This new 123-page bill was added. This provision, worded as it is, notwithstanding any law to the contrary, any person who holds current ministerial or tocological certification by an organization accredited by the National Organization for Competency Assurance, DOCA, may provide services as defined in 42 U.S.C. 1396, R6, B4, E2, capital Roman numeral I. That section was added for the first time in this bill when it was withdrawn and replaced with the substitute amendment. The Senate did pass it. The title was not.
And they had like the first reading, second reading. There's a procedure, you read the bill and was that done?
It was at the very end, the last iteration of the bill in the Senate.
And then it has to go back. Then it has to go to conference or go back to the House.
It went back to the House. The House approved it. The title of the bill was not changed when that section was added in. That is the approved practice this Court has.
And opposing counsel says we should not look at or consider the circumstances and the surrounding circumstances when this was added to the bill and what happened later when similar bills were disapproved and so forth. Can you address that in the course of addressing these related issues?
Yeah. This Court in its prior cases has frequently looked at the legislature's records of its own activities to determine the constitutionality of legislation. Cardinal Glennon is the best, most recent case. This Court has specifically held that these requirements are intended to protect the public and the legislative process.
With that outer limits case, the amendment dealing with the TIF in St. Charles was added 1 hour before the close of the session.
That's right. And, Your Honor, we do not...
That's the outer limits, I understand.
We do not disagree that if an amendment were to remain, that the mere fact that it was inserted at the end of the process, that does not create a constitutional problem. But in analyzing the logical connection, it is certainly within this Court's prerogative, and it has in fact done it in past cases, to consider the facts and circumstances regarding passage, because the larger purpose of these provisions is to ensure that important health and safety provisions are subjected to open debate before laws go into effect.
Well, it's to prevent log rolling, as we do in the Congress.
Log rolling is definitely one thing that's prohibited. That's covered more by the single subject requirement. That means you can't add unrelated provisions. The clear title provision is more of a notice provision, so everybody knows what the scope of the bill is and whether I need to look for a health services provision in a health insurance bill. Those items, in the Cardinal Glennon case, this Court considered the history of the statute going back to 1945, I think, three other versions of the bill that were introduced in 1999, a constitutional objection that had been filed by a senator arguing that the bill was unconstitutional. Those were all evidence that was before the Court.
Mr. Hess, can I interrupt you, and I hope I'm not cutting off discussion, but you're down to your last 2 minutes, and you haven't talked about standing. But you're talking about merits. Could you give us your best legal argument quickly as to standing?
Yes. Our plaintiffs are licensed physicians and surgeons. Under their licensure act, they may be professionally disciplined for coordinating or assisting in any way any person to practice medicine who's not licensed by Chapter 334. The practice of medicine is defined to include midwifery in Missouri. Nothing in 1753 changes that. To address Judge Russell.
Well, does that prohibit them from having collaborative arrangements with nurse midwives?
No, because there's specific statutory authority for collaborative practice agreements with nurses. And because nurse midwives are registered nurses, there's specific statutory authority for that relationship.
But you're asserting an interest in the health of the patients, but they're, I guess, by definition, not the doctor's patients. So the issue, the part about the discipline, I see that as an assertion. I don't know whether it's direct or tangential. Is there an assertion that there is an economic interest in terms of the economic competition of these certified professional midwives?
No assertion of an economic interest. The patients may be both patients of the doctor and people receiving services from a certified midwife. If a pregnant woman was to present at an emergency room with a medical condition, the ER physician would be required in the practice, if he could at all, to find out what care the midwife had been providing, what symptoms and conditions that the patient had been presenting with, and do everything they could to coordinate the care for the best possible outcome for that patient. And that's clearly a jeopardy that the physician should not replace.
Is there anything in the record about how many people there are who are certified professional midwives who are not nurse midwives?
No, Your Honor.
So you don't know whether there's zero or one or none? I mean, or several?
There's no information in the record regarding that.
Is that the only situation in which their concern would arise as a doctor, or are there other situations that, as to which they seek declaratory judgment to clarify?
No, I don't think that's the only situation at all. That most clearly presents the danger. But you could also have a doctor who's treating a patient who received care from a midwife. The doctor's got an established relationship. A pregnancy is a time-limited thing. The patient comes and says, hey, I've got a midwife. I want you to help, you know, I want you all to get together and work on my care. And the doctor says, you know, I can't do that. And she says, well, I want to use the midwife. The doctor put on the horns of the dilemma there. He's got to abandon his patient who he's got an established relationship with, and she may be however close she is to delivery. The doctor shouldn't have to be choosing between his professional license and the health and safety of his patient, who he's also got a moral and ethical duty to support.
But then health insurance would come in play, too. They'd start, I mean, there'd be a health insurance biopsy somewhere along the other file. Who's going to pay for it? The doctor's insurance, the midwife's insurance, someone's going to look for the insurance real quick.
Well, I don't think there's any connection to the insurance other than what we've already discussed, which it could become, as far as the midwives are concerned, a future, the health service could become a subject of a health insurance contract in the future, depending on the future action the parties may or may not take.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I want to address 2 points. One is to talk more about the hypothetical that was just raised, because I think it raises a number of interesting issues. And the second is to talk a little bit about how the scope of the bill was, in fact, broadened in this case. First of all, with respect to the hypothetical, one of the things that was touched on, I think, in the questioning was the fact that, in the end, what is really going to be the deciding factor in this is the availability of insurance in that situation. A woman is going to make a decision financially. Do I have insurance? And the fact is, that insurance is going to be available in a situation where, in the past, it would not have been. That, in my mind, is one of the things that demonstrates the relationship to insurance, to health insurance.
Is there some record on that? That anything in the record that insurance is now available, it was not before, and it is now? This kind of provision is necessary for insurance?
I believe there are legal arguments to that effect within the brief, making it clear that as a matter of public policy, the issue of insurance was something that would be...
Well, what about a factual record that because of the legalization of this practice, insurance is now available? Is that
right.
Is there a factual record to that effect?
There are not witnesses that have come on in terms of affidavits or testimony in court. This goes back to the issue of the scope of the review. This court has generally looked at the language in the various versions of the bill. Frankly, to go beyond that, to look at issues of what the legislators have said.
Well, that's the issue that you brought up. You've brought up the possibility that this is really about health insurance. But we don't have any factual record to tie that in.
That's correct.
I mean, this is your argument. And so my question is, what factual basis do you have for your argument?
I believe there is a legal basis that is sufficient in this situation, and that is that as a matter of public policy in the past, you would not have been able to issue...
Well, it seems like your argument is you can't insure something that's illegal, so maybe it's not illegal now, so maybe you can get insurance. That's pretty indirect. We don't know if you could, if they have, in other states, if they get it. All those things are not things we would normally look at, I agree, but as Judge Limbaugh said, you seem to be saying it's related to insurance, and I'm not, but you're really saying it's related, not illegal, so by making things legal, there's lots of potential collateral effects, which are good.
The legislature had, in fact, broadened the title of this bill, and they did so in committee.
Okay.
When it went into committee,
right.
It changed to insuring, to relating to insurance. And at that point, they added a provision to allow health care providers to get money from the state by seeking an offset for tax refunds and lottery winnings. Clearly, the legislature understood that this provision had been broadened in that committee action. At that point, the scope of the changes were broadened as well. There is a relationship here, and this is not a purpose thing. The discussion we're having is primarily about clear title. Purpose is defined constitutionally, but the title is defined by the legislature, and in here they put it as relating to health insurance. They understood what the scope of that title was. There is a connection here between this bill, this statute, and health insurance. Unless this court were to determine that it clearly and undoubtedly that connection does not exist, and that the legislature was wrong, this statute has to be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.